Now, when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." Then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and in all that region who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be comforted because they are no more.
Please have a seat. And may I wish you a very happy Christmas, particularly to students heading home this week. Happy Christmas. We've loved having you with us this term, and I hope you have a very happy Christmas as you head home. I need to ask, how many people here have seen the Oxford Street lights this year? Just maybe a nod or a smile if you think you have. If you haven't seen them, they are the least Christmassy lights ever. They look all right at first. You have these huge yellow stars. You think that's nice. Then you realise they are sponsored by Marmite. And Marmite's slogan is, you either love it or hate it. So what they decided to go with was a mix of Christmas characters either loving or hating Marmite, including Santa's elves. And I apologise slightly for bringing this into a church. This is Marmite's fault, not mine. Please go on their Facebook page and complain if you really want to. They have two elves at the eastern end of Oxford Street, and one of them loves Marmite. And he is head first in a jar of Marmite, kind of eating as much as he can. But then there is an elf who does not love Marmite. And he is moving. He's sort of animated as the lights flicker. And he, I'm afraid, is expressing his dislike in a very physical way. He is puking into a Santa hat repeatedly, on and on down Oxford Street. Just the least Christmassy lights ever, isn't it? Just imagine if you owned the shop underneath the vomiting elf. And your whole Christmas period, 24 hours a day, there he is. And you're trying to say, "Happy Christmas, buy a bar of chocolate." And there he is. And it's not Christmassy. I think it also is bad advice for children. So the whole point of feeding Santa is to bribe him to get nicer presents, isn't it? So Marmite is a very high-risk strategy. It's a product even the manufacturers admit half the population hate. Just don't risk it. You know Santa likes mince pies and either beer or sherry, depending on whether you get the middle-class Santa or not. Just play it safe. What if the elves think you're trying to poison them? It's not worth it. So easily the least Christmassy lights ever. Or so I thought at first. Because actually, as I read Matthew's account, so Matthew, the disciple of Jesus who gave us our last three readings, whose book you have in your hands, he is actually pushing the same slogan about Jesus. See, the lights, I don't think they thought of this, but the lights are really very Christmassy. Because Matthew wants us to see that with Jesus, you either love him or you hate him. That doesn't come across on most Christmas cards, does it? But the real baby Jesus got strong and opposite reactions from the day he was born. And I think that never comes across from Christians because we play down what Christmas really means. With the Marmite campaign, if you want to, if you really want to, you can have your face as part of the campaign. Has anyone done that? So you can set as either a lover or a hater of Marmite, and you'll get 5 minutes in Oxford Street as your face on the lights. Well, for about 15 minutes now, I want us to look at two faces, a lover and a hater of Jesus. They're in our readings. We start from where we picked up on page 4, if you want to open up the books. And our first face is the face of Herod. And Herod hates the new king. I need to burst a couple of Christmas myths. So notice it is not Christmas Day. It's after Jesus was born. Notice there are not three kings. And that's a later addition. There are three presents, but that tells you nothing. My son regularly gets three presents from just one person, so that tells you nothing. And they're not kings. They are wise men, or magi, which is the word we get magician from. So these are strange astrologer magicians from the East. So there aren't three kings, but there are two kings. And that is the problem. So verse 1, the first king is called Herod. And then the wise men come and say, where is he who was born king of the Jews? And that's our second king. There's one king on the throne and a second baby king. And if wise men from the East arrived at your house asking for the King of England, I think you'd think that was odd, and you'd wonder what to do with the camels, and it would all be a bit stressful, I imagine. But although these guys are exotic, it is not so strange for them. They've gone to the palace, that's the obvious place to find kings, and they're from Babylon, probably, or the Babylonian Empire, which means they've been reading the Jewish prophecies for years. The Magi are experts on foretelling the future. Of course, they're going to pick up the Jewish books and read them. There are loads and loads of Jewish people live in Babylon. And when they arrive, they know they're looking for God's promised king who will rule the world. And Herod knows that too. He knows exactly what they're talking about. And his religious experts, they know where to look it up. They don't think it's odd, but there is a problem. Because Herod is an old man, and he has not had a baby for a very long time. Which makes this like the kind of exciting day they get in the city sometimes, in the offices around here. Imagine you're in big city office, and the postboy arrives on the top floor and says he's looking for the new CEO. Got the post for the new chief executive. Where do you want it? But that's a bit awkward. Because Sir Chumley Redface KBE comes out of his office saying, what do you mean? I'm the CEO, have been for 20 years. And the postboy has to suggest that he checks his email because there's something they've not told him yet. See, Herod understands exactly what these wise men are on about. He knows that the King of the Jews means Christ or Messiah. And he calls together the experts. He asks them to Google their Bible to find out where the Christ was to be born. And they know exactly what that means. You can see their answer in verse 5 and verse 6. It means a king, a new king to shepherd my people Israel, born in Shepherd King David's city. And they know as well that this king comes from God. The words in verse 6 were written at least 500 years before Jesus was born. Only God could arrange that. Know the city at least 500 years beforehand. Which means Herod has a bit of an issue, but verse 5, he's got a bit of a result actually, because Bethlehem's really close by. So what he does, it's only 5 miles away, so he indulges in a bit of nifty government outsourcing, and he sends his consultant magi to go and find the new king, verse 8. And verse 8 is exactly what he should say. He says, go and search diligently for the child. And when you found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him. When the real king comes, whoever's been keeping the seat warm, the throne warm, has to step aside and bow down to the new king. But maybe, do you just hear the tone of pantomime villain? Maybe you're suspicious because maybe you know too much about politics or human nature. And you see in verse 12, God shares your suspicions. And he warns the wise men to go home a different way. which makes Herod a bit frustrated. He waits for them to go 5 miles one way and do a bit of worshipping, and then 5 miles back the other way. Maybe we'll allow just for kind of one stop at the Little Chef, a bit of smothered chicken and an ice cream. But where are they? Why is it taking them so long? And he waits. Maybe he waits a whole 24 hours. Then in verse 16, just over the page, we get the first of our Marmite reactions. Herod, when he saw he'd been tricked by the wise men, became furious. And then we see what kind of shepherd Herod is. Because he sends to the town where David, King David, had been a little boy, and he kills all of the boys in the town, all the boys under the age of 2, just to be sure, just to give himself a safety margin, kill the lot. The quote in verse 18, it was originally about the brutality of a foreign invasion. Who needs foreigners when you have a king like Herod? And watching him, we see what was going on with Herod all along. He hates this baby he's never met because he hates the idea of his authority being taken away. The equivalent today, I think, would be Prince Harry in Afghanistan receiving the news that Princess Kate is pregnant, which means that Harry will be demoted from number 3 in line to the throne to number 4. So imagine Harry saying, well, not if I can help it. And they gather some of his army mates into his helicopter and they fly to London and the missiles head down, I don't know where it is, and into Kensington Palace, and boom, Harry has taken direct Route 1 action. That's what Herod is like. And notice that Herod hates Jesus because he understands him. Jesus is the fulfillment of the promises. He is Christ. And notice that Herod hates Jesus because the evidence is so good. He's not unsure about this, whether he's Christ or not. He's sure, so he has to exterminate him. And we get a real window inside Herod's soul, I think, here. And at one level, he's just a bit pathetic, isn't he? He's sneaky. He's insecure. He's a bit of a bodge job. He can't even execute a baby. Jesus' family slip away to Egypt. And it's all a bit stupid. If you believe that God could arrange this birth 500 years ago and bring magi from the east across empires to get there, surely you're not going to be able to trick God with a few soldiers. But worse than that, Herod is an old man. And we know in verse 15, he dies pretty soon after. And that is the final end of his plan to stop God taking his authority away. But even a pathetic, sneaky, insecure dictator is still a horrible thing. His sneakiness does get him a kind of time frame. 2 years, okay. And his brutality is paranoid, but it is real. And his soldiers are real. And the suffering and the pain he causes is real. Given the population of Bethlehem then, we think something like a dozen babies would have died. 12 families faced with death and sadness. 12 boys taken out of the nursery school. Not going to be any boys in nursery for a couple of years. And there'll be more to say in our second point, but this brutal government murder is not here because it's exceptional, but because it's normal. See, all around the world, in any number of conflicts, in any number of presidential palaces, these orders go on being given, don't they? And children go on dying. And that is precisely why we need a king from God. That's why we need the Christ. That's where all of the quotes that Matthew's chosen, that's where they go. We need a Christ who will end war and end evil and bring peace and stop the weeping. And Jesus is born into this world of suffering for exactly that reason. He starts life as a refugee and a child at risk of violence because he is the promised king, come to put an end to it, to take over from all of the Herods. And that is why Herod hates him. And just like the Marmite campaign, I think Matthew's aim is to move people out of the not bothered category into a strong reaction. Matthew thinks that you should either love or hate Jesus, nothing in between. See, Herod is not unique in Matthew's gospel. Nearly all the other characters in our account, they end up wanting Jesus dead too. The chief priests, the scribes, the crowd in Jerusalem, as you read through, you'll see pretty much everybody wants Jesus dead. And Herod's reasons are general, not unique. The baby has come to remove us from our personal throne, just as surely as he came to remove Herod from his. The baby has come to prevent me from causing evil and suffering, just as surely as he's come to prevent Herod. So you put together all of the titles that Jesus is given here. You look up the bits of Old Testament that Matthew chooses, and you have a king, a Christ, a shepherd, a son of God, who will rule from sea to sea and over every single nation, including me and my desire to rule my own life autonomously without the interference of God or his son Jesus. So Herod's reaction is one that I recognize. It's one that I feel personally. I hate Jesus' attempt to stop my self-centered self-rule. Okay, so there's the first strong reaction. Hate the new king. But just like with Marmite, there is a second reaction possible, which is love the rescuing king. So hate and love. This reaction, it's strongest in verse 10. Turn back to verse 10. These weird magi arrive, and when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. The magi love Jesus. Just think about just the effort they've been to. In most children's nativity plays I've ever seen, the people playing the Three Kings, they play this as if they'd come all the way from the corner shop with the presents. They have journeyed for months, and they've come to worship, which word, it's the word they use for gods and kings. It means to bow right down and put your face in the dirt. These important, rich people in their culture, they have their faces in the dirt before this young child. Again, maybe imagine this happening in your family. So imagine you've got a new cousin in your family, and a few months in, the doorbell rings, and there are these mysterious magicians from the East who push their way in through the front door. Hello, Mum, don't mind us. And then they begin to worship your cousin. That would be a little bit odd, wouldn't it? A little bit strange. And they open their treasures, literally sort of treasure boxes, traveling safes, and they bring out quite some presents. I mean, no baby I know has had presents like this. Gold cost then roughly what it costs now, but frankincense and myrrh were much more expensive then than now. Something like £5,000 a kilo, that sort of thing, for what they're being given. And the contrast with Herod could not be greater, could it? These ignorant foreign stargazers, they hear that God's king has come, and they rush across empires to kneel in the dirt in front of him. While 5 miles away, the Bible-reading court of the king of God's people, they send soldiers to murder him. And notice that their reaction to this king, though, it is not the grudging submission you give to a dictator. I think that is all that Herod could imagine. All he can imagine is Jesus will mean grudging submission. They rejoice exceedingly with great joy, and they bring the most valuable things they have as a present. And Matthew says that's the right response. Again, the Old Testament verses he's chosen, they shout, rescuer. And they're all about the end of the exile I mentioned earlier. So God's people were separated from God, sent into Babylon. That's why the Magi know about them. And Jesus comes to say that exile is over. You can come in from the colds. Because exile was God's response to his people doing in their lives what all of us do in our lives and what Herod did in his. They rejected God's rule and authority, and God punished them with exile. Even though actually in itself that's just a small picture of what faces us when we die, like Herod did. But this baby king says rescue, says time to come in from the cold, time to be friends with God again. Our first reading from Matthew tells us what the name Jesus means. Did you know that before? It means he will save his people from their sins. So if Herod's hatred resonates with me, so too does the joy of the wise men to hear that somebody could rescue me from my sins. And even so early in Jesus' life, we have all the clues we need here of how this will work and how good it is. The Magi, these weird astrologers from the East, they tell us that everybody is included in this offer of rescue. Doesn't matter who you are. If you take these books away with you, I hope you will, and read them to the end, you'll see the last words are an offer to all nations to become disciples of Jesus. And then the three gifts they bring tell us how. I'm slightly sorry, actually, we're not singing the cheesy We Three Kings song. I think probably we're not doing that because they weren't kings and there weren't three of them and some other kind of minor inaccuracies like that. But what it does do is lay out the three gifts and what they mean. Gold is for a king. Frankincense, incense, that is for the kind of offerings that priests give. And myrrh is for embalming corpses. Jesus will save his people from their sins by being a shepherd, nothing like Herod. He's a king who will die as an offering for his people. And you'll need to pack him with myrrh and put his corpse in a tomb. See, our passage makes crystal clear that Jesus is born into a world of suffering and evil. No family in Bethlehem could miss that. But the escape to Egypt is not God whisking his baby out of suffering and leaving the others to it. That is God preparing his son for the moment of most usefulness for him to suffer, when he could offer his life as an offering in place of guilty, evil people. Again, read to the end of the book, or even halfway through the book, and you'll see Jesus' death dominates the story of his life. And that is the tragedy of Herod. Herod sees Jesus as a threat, but the new king is also the rescuing king, come to save from sin, even to save somebody truly evil like Herod. He wants to take Herod's place, yes, that's right, but not just on the throne. He wants to take Herod's place on the cross. He wants to die Herod's death, take Herod's punishment, so that Herod could come in from the cold. And again, what Matthew wants to do is move people who are not bothered towards either hate or love. See, the reasons why the wise men love Jesus, they are not unique to them either. They're in general, they're true. Jesus fulfills all the promises. He is the Christ. The answer to suffering is the future enforcement of this baby's rule when he comes again. And the answer to sin and guilt is the death of this baby. So love or hate, that's where I want to leave you. When Jerusalem heard the king had arrived, they were troubled. And maybe that is your reaction to hearing this, particularly if some of this is new to you. I'd encourage you to get to know Jesus better by reading about him. Read what Matthew thought of him. And as you understand Jesus better, ask yourself, do you want to worship him or to kill him? Love him or hate him? Let me pray. From you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Father God, at Christmas time we praise you so much for your generous gift of the Lord Jesus Christ. Come to be king and come to die to rescue his people from all nations. And we praise and thank you for that gift of love. Amen.